Chapter 5. Also groundhogs and other small animals, but they are for the most part, as we have said, not known to the Christians. 1. A deep red Spanish wine. 2. The original as water limonene, water citrons. 4. The watermelon, little known in Dutch gardens at this time, was regarded rather as a citron than as a melon. 3. Panthers. Of birds, this country is by no means without its share. There are great numbers of birds of prey, as eagles of two kinds, the bald-headed, which has the head, tail and principal wing feathers white, and the common kind, hawks, buzzards, sparrow hawks, crows, chicken hawks, and many others, yet all are birds of prey, and capable of being trained and used for hunting, though they differ somewhat in shape from those in the Netherlands. There is also a bird which has its head like a cat, and its body like a large owl, colored white. Less than one we know no name for it in the Netherlands, but in France it is called Grand Duck, and is esteemed very highly. 1. The cat owl or great Bardone, Bubo virginianus. It is not white, but neither is the Grand Duck, the European Bubo. Van der Donk, in his Beschrijving, says, of a light ash color. The other birds found in this country are turkeys, the same as in the Netherlands, but they are wild, and are plentiest, and best in winter. Several kinds of partridges, some smaller than in the Netherlands, others larger, curlews, wood and water snipes, pheasants, heath hens, cranes, herons, bitterns, multitudes of pigeons resembling ringdoves, but a little smaller, quails, merlins, thrushes, shore runners, but in some respects different from those of the Netherlands. There are other small birds, some of which sing, but the names of most of them are unknown to us, and would take too long to enumerate. Waterfowl are found here of different kinds, but all very good, and fit to eat, such as the swans, similar to those in Netherlands and full as large. 3 kinds of geese, gray geese, which are the largest and best, bernicles and white-headed geese, ducks of different kinds, wigeons, divers, coots, cormorants and several others, but not so abundant as the foregoing. The river fish are almost the same as in the Netherlands, comprising salmon, sturgeon, 12s, 13s, 1 shad, carp, perch, pike, trout, roach, thickhead, suckers, sunfish, eel, 9 eyes or lampreys, both much more abundant and larger than in the Netherlands, besides many other valuable fish which we are unable to name. 1. Striped bass and drum fish. In the salt water are caught codfish, haddock, weakfish, herring, mackerel, thornbacks, flounders, plaice, sheep's head, blackfish, sea dogs, pannons and many others, also lobsters, crabs, great cockles, from which the Indians make the white and black zeewent, oysters and mussels in great quantities with many other kinds of shellfish very similar to each other, for which we know no names, besides sea and land tortoises. The venomous animals consist, for the most part, of adders and lizards, though they are harmless or nearly so. There are snakes of different kinds, which are not dangerous, and flee before men, if they possibly can, else they are usually beaten to death. The rattlesnakes, however, which have a rattle on the tail, with which they rattle very loudly when they are angry, or intend to sting, and which grows every year a joint larger, are very malignant, and do not readily retreat before a man or any other creature. Whoever is bitten by them runs great danger of his life, unless great care be taken. But fortunately they are not numerous, and they're grown spontaneously in the country the true snake root, which is very highly esteemed by the Indians as an unfailing cure. The medicinal plants found in New Netherland up to the present time, by little search, as far as they have come to our knowledge, consist principally of Venus's hair, hart's tongue, lingwort, polypody, white mullein, priest's shoe, garden and sea beech orange, water germander, tower mustard, sweet flag, sassafras, crowfoot, platan, shepherd's purse, mallows, wild marjoram, crane's bill, marshmallows, false eglantine, laurel, violet, blue flag, wild indigo, Solomon's seal, dragon's blood, comfrey, milfoil, many sorts of fern, wild lilies of different kinds, agrimony, wild leek, blessed thistle, snake root, Spanish figs which grow out of the leaves, two tarragon and numerous other plants and flowers. But as we are not skilled in those things, we cannot say much of them. Yet it is not to be doubted that experts would be able to find many simples of great and different virtues, in which we have confidence, principally because the Indians know how to cure very dangerous and perilous wounds and sores by roots, leaves and other little things. 2. Probably the prickly pear. It is certain that the Indigo sylvestris grows here spontaneously without human aid. It could be easily cultivated, if there were people who would undertake it. At least, the other species would grow very well, and yield a good profit. We have seen proof of this in the colony of Rensselaerswyck, though it was all sown too late, and upon a barren rock, where there was little earth. It came up very well, but in consequence of the drought turned very yellow and withered, and was neglected. Nevertheless, it was evident that if it were well covered it would succeed. Madder plants also would undoubtedly grow well both in field and gardens, and better than in Zealand. There may be discovered casually, or by little search, different minerals, upon some of which tests have been made according to our limited means, and which are found good. We have attempted several times to send specimens of them to the Netherlands, once with Arendt van Kerenben by way of New Haven and of England, but the ship was wrecked, and no tidings of it have ever been received. Less than one after that, Director William Kieft also had many different specimens with him in the ship the Princess, but they were lost in her with him. Less than 2, the mountains and mines nevertheless remain, and are easily to be found again, whenever it may be thought proper to go to the labor and expense. In New England they have already progressed so far, as to make castings of iron pots, tankards, balls and the like out of their minerals, and we firmly believe all that is wanting here is to have a beginning made. For there are in New Netherland 2 kinds of marcasite, and mines of white and yellow quicksilver, of gold, silver, copper, iron, black lead and hard coal. It is supposed that tin and lead will also be found, but who will seek after them, or who will make use of them, as long as there are not more people? 1. Arendt Corson. Van der Donk says that he and Kieft saw an Indian painting his face with a shining mineral. They had it assayed, and it proved to contain gold. Arendt Corson, sent to Holland with a bag of it, embarked early in 1646 in the Reach ship of New Haven, Captain George Lamerton, for whose return into the harbor as a phantom ship, months afterward, see Cotton Mather's Magnalia, I-84 ed. of 1853, and Longfellow's poem, The Phantom Ship. 2. In August, 1647, some months after Stuyvesant's arrival, Kieft sailed for Holland. With him sailed his enemy Domin Bogardus, and the chief victims of his and Stuyvesant's persecution, Kuyter and Mellon. The ship was wrecked on the Welsh coast. Kieft was drowned. His opponents escaped. Fuller's earth is found in abundance, and Armenian, bull, also white, red, yellow, blue and black clay very solid and greasy, and should be suitable for many purposes. Earth for bricks and for tiles, mountain crystal, glass like that of Muscovy, 1 green serpentine stone in great abundance, blue limestone, slate, red grindstone, flint, paving stone, large quantities of all varieties of quarry stone suitable for hewing millstones, and for building all kinds of walls, asbestos and very many other kinds applicable to the use of man. There are different paints, but the Christians are not skilled in them. They are seen daily on the Indians, who understand their nature, and use them to paint themselves in different colors. If it were not that explorers are wanting, our people would be able to find them, and provide themselves with them. 1. Mica. Of the Americans or natives, their appearance, occupations, and means of support. The natives are generally well set in their limbs, slender round the waist, broad across the shoulders, and have black hair and dark eyes. They are very nimble and fleet, well adapted to travel on foot, and to carry heavy burdens. They are foul and slovenly in their actions, and make little of all kinds of hardship, to which indeed they are by nature, and from their youth accustomed. They are like the Brazilians in color, or as yellow as the people who sometimes pass through the Netherlands, and are called gypsies. The men generally have no beard, or very little, which some even pull out. They use very few words, which they consider well. Naturally they are very modest, simple and inexperienced, though in their actions high-minded enough, vigorous and quick to comprehend or learn, be it right or wrong, whenever they are so inclined. They are not straightforward as soldiers but perfidious, accomplishing all their enterprises by treachery, using many stratagems to deceive their enemies, and usually ordering all their plans, involving any danger, by night. The desire of revenge appears to be born in them. They are very obstinate in defending themselves when they cannot run, which however they do when they can, and they make little of death when it is inevitable, and despair all tortures which can be inflicted upon them while dying, manifesting no sorrow, but usually singing until they are dead. They understand how to cure wounds and hurts, or inveterate sores and injuries, by means of herbs and roots, which grow in the country, and which are known to them. Their clothing, both for men and women, is a piece of duffels or leather in front, with a deerskin or elk's hide over the body. Some have bears' hides of which they make doublets. Others have coats made of the skins of raccoons, wild cats, wolves, dogs, otters, squirrels, beavers and the like, and also of turkeys' feathers. At present they use for the most part duffel's cloth, which they obtain in barter from the Christians. They make their stockings and shoes of deerskins or elk's hide, and some of shoes made of corn husks, of which they also make sacks. Their money consists of white and black zeewent, which they themselves make. Their measure and valuation is by the hand, or by the fathom, but their corn is measured by deontas, which are bags they make themselves. Ornamenting themselves consists in cutting their bodies, or painting them with various colors, sometimes even all black, if they are in mourning, yet generally in the face. They hang zeewent, both white and black, about their heads, which they otherwise are not wont to cover, but on which they are now beginning, to wear hats and caps bought of the Christians. They also put it in their ears, and around their necks and bodies, wherewith after their manner they appear very fine. They have long deer's hair which is dyed red, and of which they make rings for the head, and other fine hair of the same color, to hang from the neck like tresses, of which they are very proud. They frequently smear their skin and hair with different kinds of grease. They can almost all swim. They themselves make the boats they use, which are of two kinds, some of entire trees, which they hollow out with fire, hatchets and adzes, and which the Christians call canoes. Others are made of bark, which they manage very skillfully, and which are also called canoes. Traces of the institution of marriage can just be perceived among them, and nothing more. A man and woman join themselves together without any particular ceremony other than, that the man by previous agreement with the woman, gives her some zeewent or cloth, which on their separation, if it happens soon, he often takes again. Both men and women are utterly unchaste, and shamelessly promiscuous in their intercourse, which is the cause of the men so often changing their wives and the women their husbands. Ordinarily they have but one wife, sometimes two or three, but this is generally among the chiefs. They have also among them different conditions of persons, such as noble and ignoble. The men are generally lazy, and do nothing until they become old and unesteemed, when they make spoons, wooden bowls, bags, nets and other similar articles. Beyond this the men do nothing except fish, hunt and go to war. The women are compelled to do the rest of the work, such as planting corn, cutting, and drawing firewood, cooking, taking care of the children, and whatever else there is to be done. Their dwellings consist of hickory saplings, placed upright in the ground and bent archwise, The tops are covered with barks of trees, which they cut for this purpose in great quantities. Some even have within them rough carvings of faces and images, but these are generally in the houses of the chiefs. In the fishing and hunting seasons, they lie under the open sky a little better. They do not live long in one place, but move about several times in a year, at such times, and to such places as it appears best and easiest for them to obtain subsistence. They are divided into two different tribes and languages, each tribe living generally by itself, and having one of its number as a chief, though he has not much power or distinction except in their dances or in time of war. Among some there is not the least knowledge of God, and among others very little, though they relate many strange fables concerning him. They are in general much afraid of the devil, who torments them greatly, and some give themselves up to him, and hold the strangest notions about him. But their devils, they say, will have nothing to do with the Dutch. No haunting of spirits and the like are heard of among them. They make offerings to the devil sometimes, but with few solemnities. They believe in the immortality of the soul. They have some knowledge of the sun, moon and stars, of which they are able to name many, and they judge tolerably well about the weather. There is hardly any law or justice among them, except sometimes in war matters, and then very little. The nearest of blood is the Avenger. The youngest are the most courageous, and do for the most part what they please. Their weapons formerly were the bow and arrow, which they employ with wonderful skill, and the cudgel, but they now, that is, those who live near the Christians, or have many dealings with them, generally use firelocks and hatchets, which they obtain in trade. They are exceedingly fond of guns, sparing no expense for them, and are so skillful in the use of them, that they surpass many Christians. Their food is coarse and simple, drinking water as their only beverage, and eating the flesh of all kinds of animals which the country affords, cooked without being cleansed or dressed. They eat even badgers, dogs, eagles and such like trash, upon which Christians place no value. They use all kinds of fish, which they commonly cook without removing the entrails, and snakes, frogs and the like. They know how to preserve fish and meat until winter, and to cook them with cornmeal. They make their bread of maize, but it is very plain, and cook it either whole or broken in a pestle block. The women do this and make of it a pap or porridge, which some of them call sapsis, one others a nimder, and which is their daily food. They mix this also sometimes with small beans of different colors, which they plant themselves, but this is held by them as a dainty dish more than as daily food. One probably a misprint for sappen. For the next word, the manuscript has to wonder. By whom New Netherl, and was first possessed, and what its boundaries are. That New Netherl, and was first found, claimed, and possessed by Netherlanders, has already been stated. But inasmuch as a dispute has arisen, not only with the Swedes, which is of little moment, but especially with the English, who have already entered upon, and seized a great part thereof, it is necessary to speak of each claim in particular, and somewhat at large. But because this matter has been treated upon by various ingenious minds in its length and breadth, and as those claims are so absurd, as to require only a few reasons in answer to them, we will be as brief as in any wise practicable. After their high mightinesses, the Lord States General, were pleased, in the year of our Lord 1622, one to include this province in their grant to the Honorable West India Company, their honors deemed it necessary to take into possession so naturally beautiful and noble a province, which was immediately done, as opportunity offered, the same as in all similar beginnings. Since the year of our Lord 1623, four forts have been built there by order of the Lord's directors, two one on the south point of the Manhattan's Island, where the east and north rivers unite, called New Amsterdam, where the staple RIGHT3 of New Netherl, and was designed to be, another upon the same river, 6 and 30 Dutch miles, leagues, higher up, and 3 leagues below the great KOCHOOS 4 fall of the Mohawk River, on the west side of the river, in the colony of Rensselaerswyck, and is called Orange. But about this river there ain't been as yet no dispute with any foreigners. Upon the south river lies Fort Nassau, and upon the fresh river, the Good Hope. And these 4 forts there have been always from the beginning to the present time some garrisons, although they are all now in a very bad condition, not only in themselves, but also as regards garrisons. 1-16-21. 2 here and managers, the managers or directors of the company. 3 staple right is a privilege granted to the inhabitants of a place, whereby the masters of vessels or merchants trading along their coasts, are compelled to discharge their cargoes there for sale, or else pay duties. 4 cohos. These forts, both to the south and north, are so situated as not only to close and control the said rivers, but also to command the plantations between them, as well as those round about them, and on the other side of the river as far as the ownership by occupation extends. These the Honorable Company declared they owned, and would maintain against all foreign or domestic powers who should attempt to seize them against their consent. Yet, especially on the northeast side of New Netherland, this has been not at all regarded or observed by the English living to the eastward. For notwithstanding possession was already fully taken by the building and occupation of Fort Good Hope, and there was no neglect from time to time in warning them, in making known our rights, and in protesting against their usurpation and violence, they have disregarded all these things, and have seized and possessed, and still hold, the largest and best part of New Netherland, that is, on the east side of the North River, from Cape Cod, by our people in 1609 called New Holland, and taken possession of, if we are correctly informed, by the setting up of the arms of their high mightinesses. 1-2 within 6 leagues of the North River, where the English have now a village called Stamford, from whence one could travel now in a summer's day to the North River and back again, if one knows the Indian path. The English of New Haven also have a trading house which lies east or southeast of Magdalen Island, and not more than 6 leagues from the North River, in which this island lies, on the east bank 23.5 leagues above Fort Amsterdam. Less than 1 This trading post was established for no other purpose than to divert the trade of the North River, or to destroy it entirely, for the river is now quite free. They have also endeavored several times, during 8 or 9 years past, to buy of the Indians a large quantity of land, which would have served more than any other thing, to draw off the trade, as we have understood from the Indians, for the post is situated not more than 3 or 4 leagues from the eastern bounds of the colony of Rensselaerswyck. 1 see delete, page 37, supra. The words in square brackets appear in the manuscript, but not in the printed pamphlet. 2 Magdalen Island is in the Hudson near Annandale. It appears that the nearest post to the lower Hudson possessed hitherto by the New Englanders was that which the New Haven people established in 1646 on the Housatonic near the present Derby, Connecticut, and that their nearest post to the upper Hudson was that which Governor Hopkins, of Connecticut, set up in 1641 at Warrenoco, now Westfield, Massachusetts. This and similar difficulties these people now wish to lay to our charge, all under the pretense of a very clear conscience, notwithstanding King James, of most glorious memory, chartered the Virginia companies upon condition that they should remain 100 miles from each other according to our reckoning. Less than 1 they are willing to avail themselves of this grant, but by no means to comply with the terms stipulated in it. 1 The 100 miles of the Virginia patent of 1606 were English miles. All the islands, bays, havens, rivers, hills and places, even to a great distance on the other side of New Holland or Cape Cod, have Dutch names, which our Dutch shipmasters and traders gave to them. Less than one, these were the first to discover and to trade to them, even before they had names, as the English themselves well know. But as long as they can manage it, and matters go as they please, they are willing not to know it. And those of them who are at the fresh river have desired to enter into an agreement, and to make a yearly acknowledgement or an absolute purchase, which indeed is proof positive, that our right was well known to them, and that they themselves had nothing against it in conscience, although they now, from time to time, have invented and pretended many things in order to screen themselves, or thereby to cause at least delay. One, an exaggeration, yet the number of such names is considerable, as may be seen, by consulting the appendix to Asher's Bibliography of New Netherland. Moreover, the people of Rhode Island, when they were at variance with those of the Bay, one sought refuge among the Dutch, and sojourned among them. For all these things, and what we shall relate in the following pages, there are proofs and documents enough, either with the secretary of the company, or with the directors. 1. Massachusetts Bay. The most conspicuous instance is Mrs. Anne Hutchinson. In short, is it just this with the English, they are willing to know the Netherlanders, and to use them as a protection in time of need. But when that is past, they no longer regard them, but play the fool with them. This happens so, only because we have neglected to populate the land, or, to speak more plainly and truly, because we have, are of regard for our own profit, wish to scrape all the fat into one or more pots, and thus secure the trade and neglect population. Long Island, which, on account of its convenient bays and havens, and its good well-situated lands, is a crown of the province, they have also seized at once, except on the west and two Dutch villages Broekelen and Amersfoort, one not of much importance and some English villages, as Gravesend, Greenwich, and Mespet. From WHICH 2 the people were driven off during the war, and which was afterwards confiscated by Director Kieft, but as the owners appealed therefrom, it remains undecided. There are now a very few people in the place. Also, Vlissingen, which is a pretty village and tolerably rich in cattle. The fourth and last village is Heemstede, which is superior to the rest, for it is very rich in cattle. 1. Brooklyn and Flatlands. 2. IEE, from Mesbath or Newtown. Gravesend had been settled by Lady Deborah Moody, Greenwich in 1639 by Captain Daniel Patrick and Robert Feake, Mesbath by Francis Doughty in 1642, Flushing and Hempstead by other English in 1645 and 1644. As we are now on the subject of Long Island, we will, because the English claim it, speak of it somewhat particularly. The ocean on the south, and the East River on the north side of it, shape this island, and as we have said, it is, on account of its good situation, of its land, and of its convenient harbors, and anchoring places, a crown of New Netherland. The East River separates it from Manhattan's Island as far as the Heligot. It is tolerably wide and convenient, and has been inhabited by our freemen from the first, according as opportunities offered. In the year 1640 a Scotchman, with an English commission, came to Director William Kieft. He laid claim to the island, but his pretension was not much regarded. For which reason he departed without accomplishing anything, having influenced only a few simple people. Director Kieft also afterwards sent, and broke up the English who wished to begin a settlement at Oyster Bay, and thus it remained for a long time. 1. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.